Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio, as you always are on Fridays, 11 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, here in beautiful downtown Los Angeles. Welcome, everybody. As always, I have an amazing guest on the show today who's going to teach you a lot of things, inspire you, and we're going to help you in your life, basically. I know that you've heard about him. He's been all over the media, and he's done film, production, so many things. He's a motivational speaker, basically. And his name is James Swigert. Yes, you know him. You know exactly who I'm talking about. And what we're going to be doing today is talking about his latest book, and it's called If You Say So. That's how I like to... If You Say So, or as I call it, whatever, dude. Right. But let me just tell you a little bit about James, in case you don't really know that much, but I think you do. He is a mentor and coach to many celebrities, rock stars, and movie executives. He writes about so many wonderful truths that he's discovered throughout his life. And primarily, he talks about the way you conceptualize your life, the story you tell yourself, make it what it is, and live your life and move on. So he's going to inspire you today. You know, he's not only an author and a motivational speaker, he's a successful executive producer and director for film and TV. And just a little bit more information here. Over the past 25 years, James has built, run, and sold several multi-million dollar award-winning production companies. And also, of course, during the time, like I mentioned, he's coached celebrities and rock stars, movie executives, and as you're going to hear about as we talk about his book, If You Say So, the successes in his life were hard fought because nothing came easy until he changed his story. And I know you guys out there love the stories about people who have gone through a lot of stuff and really lived through it and, you know, come on the couch here to talk about how they've really changed their lives. So, welcome to the show, James. So nice to have you.
It's great to be here.
Ah, great to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Ah, you did such a great book.
Thank you.
Yes, way to go.
Awesome.
I really love books that tell stories because it's just, it's all about sort of the journey you went through in your life. You're still going through a journey. You're still learning. And that's so exciting.
Sure. Yeah. True.
But the way you write your story and the way you tell and talk about some of the things you've gone through and your metaphors, which we'll talk about, which are pretty awesome too, are really interesting. It's the kind of book, guys, that when you start reading it, you want to follow James through his adventures, his story, and what he went through. And I know many of you guys will be saying, whoa, yes, I did that. I know that. I know what he's talking about. So let's get into it. That's just a little tease for y'all. So, you know, so I really want you to get this book, guys, so you can experience it on your own. And that's why we're going to be telling you how to help yourself. So the book is information about his life, what he went through, what he's now become, how he helps others. And also, it's a self-help book. It tells a story, but right?
Absolutely.
So many wonderful messages in here. So let's just get to the obvious starting off here. Why did you name your book If You Say So?
Great question.
Thank you.
And thank you for that wonderful introduction. Oh, that was beautiful.
That's great.
Honored.
Thank you.
And the title, If You Say So, and the subtitle, My Story and How I Changed It to Save My Life, really came from an interaction with a man that I was mentoring And they're the stories in the book. But essentially, he had been going through some health challenges.
Yes.
And he was getting tests done, and he called me and he said, "Hey, they're thinking I might have multiple sclerosis." Mm. And he was very nervous and scared, mm-hmm. obviously.
Sure.
And once he got the diagnosis that he had MS, he was mortified.
Yes.
And we were on the phone talking, and I was just there comforting him. And, mm-hmm. you know, he the words that came out of his mouth were, "James, this is going to be so hard."
Mm.
And my thought was, if you say so.
Wow.
And here's where that came from, because some people are thinking, "God, how callous." Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the information that I had, his name's Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
He lets me talk about him. I think we call him Charlie in the book because he goes by both. What Charlie didn't know is that I had another young man that I was mentoring who was 5 years down the road of dealing with MS.
Interesting. Yeah.
And it's Jack Osborne, Ozzy Osborne's son.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And, you know, I coached Jack as well. And so what I did was I hung up with Charlie and I called Jack. I said, "Jack, what are you doing right now?" Mm. And he said, I'm at the house.
Mm.
I said, "Hey, I got one of my guys just got diagnosed with MS. Can I come over?" He's like, "Absolutely."
Mm.
So I went and got Charlie, brought him over to Jack's house. We sat in Jack's kitchen and Jack proceeded to tell Charlie, what it was like to live with MS. "Here's the injection I give myself. I stay away from these foods. I eat these foods. And I have three beautiful daughters and a full life. And I'm a producer and a director and do TV shows around the world. And my life has not been affected."
Wow.
And so, and in fact, Jack has, in effort to help others, has become an advocate for MS and speaks, you know, he's very active in that space. And all of a sudden, I got to see Charlie's story about MS change right in that kitchen.
Yes.
And it was that thing that's like, and so months later when I went back, Charlie works at the NFL Network. He's a very, very successful creative director, and he's got multiple Emmys on his shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to visit him at the NFL Network months later on his whiteboard in his office, he had... "If you say it's going to be hard, it will be." James Swigert. And I went, "Oh my God," he's credited me with that. And because we talked about that, this concept, right?
Yes, exactly.
Of the stories we tell ourselves.
That's exactly.
And some of them aren't true.
Oh boy, but they're so firmly formed in those neural patterns, aren't they?
They are.
Upbringing in our early environmental.
For sure. What are some of your stories that you that you've had to change?
Yeah,
that you've been able to change.
Well, you know, you just asked me the question. I was just going to ask you. So
sorry, who's interviewing you?
Yeah, really.
Who's interviewing who?
Okay,
here,
I can use a little counseling, you know, from James. But no, I think some of the
because we all have them, right?
Oh my goodness, everybody has them.
We all have stories,
and people like you and I were talking about before the show. People sometimes say, "Well, you look like you're a healthy person. You're a psychologist. Oh my gosh, you have great ideas." And I say, "Well, first of all, I've learned them throughout the years, and I've had a lot of bumps, and I've had done a lot of stupid things. We all grow and we learn.
Right, so we're imperfectly human.
We
right?
all have messages growing up, and if you were raised in a perfect, so-called perfect home, look, you know, we aren't. we come into the world with, you know, as little souls." Eyes wide open, learning new things in the linear body. And we sometimes shake the dice on the parental things or maybe the lessons we need to learn, whatever. But I think, no, I've had some lessons, not as profound as yours. So that I wanted to talk. To answer your question, I would say probably that The most profound lesson I learned is that you don't have to control everything. As a matter of fact, you don't have to control anything except your mind, your
that's
thoughts,
great.
And your actions.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I think for me, I deal with many people coming through trauma and adversity. I'm kind of, somebody called me, "You're like the Ray Donovan of recovery
yeah,
and helping
fix
people
me,
that
Ray.
I come in and I do a lot of crisis management
yes.
and And I'm good at that. And I've kept a lot of people off of TMZ for the wrong things.
No kidding. Good for you.
And so what I've done is obviously I've been working with a very kind of elite core of executives and celebrities, et cetera. But what I've done with this book is I really wanted to bring all of these lessons and all the things I've learned from my teachers to everyone. I want everyone to access this.
Exactly.
And so, but this going back to the story concept and those stories that we're telling ourselves, that in order to change the story, it really starts with the words we the words we use on ourselves. This is all you know, my probably greatest teacher on this topic, Don Miguel Ruiz, is the first of the Four Agreements, which is his greatest book.
And
be impeccable with your word.
That's right.
Right.
It's really true.
So the power of the spoken word, and always speak in the direction of truth and love, and never speak against yourself or others. And that's what this is. And I've just boiled it down to this simple four words, and it's become the kind of this movement.
Yes.
Which is kind of fun because...
No, it really is.
People, when they read the book, they'll call me. My friends would call me a week later. This friend of mine, Michael Van Breezen, who's a producer at Fox, he called me the next week. He goes, oh my God, I've caught myself saying, if you say so, to myself five times this week.
Good.
And I said it 10 times to my staff.
That's beautiful.
You know, because people you respond to these stories that... that you know, again, we feel like we're the victim of circumstance sometimes, and we're not. We can create our own weather.
God,
and it starts
really
with the words we say. Right?
It really does. Now, some people say, some folks in my community say that if we, you know, change our words, it does. It sort of rewires the brain. I mean, it repetition and rehearsal, right?
Absolutely.
But as in many affirmations, some people say to me stuff like, you know, I give them all these affirmations, you know, individually, personal affirmations, and I prepare these sheets for them. I say, you say this as many times as you can a day when you have downtime from your gig or whatever you're doing, and be with it in the moment. Feel it. Picture it, you know. they keep saying to me, but I don't feel it. I don't believe it. I don't. It's not me, or it's not who I am. So do you have to sort of first embrace and take time to find the truth of those words that are positive?
Absolutely. I think the first step, and I was actually just sharing this with somebody, when I there has to be an opening, right? Because we believe what we believe.
Right.
And we, you know, you look across America right now and the political climate, regardless if you're blue or red, people believe what they believe.
Sure.
And we're not going to sway somebody the other way with a, you know, quippy Facebook comment on a post or a Twitter, you know, retweet. We're not going to change anyone's beliefs. And so, but what happens is when we're believing stories that are detrimental to our well-being, what we have to do is, a friend of mine, I was believing one of my stories.
Yeah.
I was looping it in my head.
Right.
And as you pointed to earlier, these are, you know, in my book, I write about childhood trauma, abuse, alcoholism, drug addiction, depression, and suicide.
These are all of your experiences.
These are my experiences.
By the way, listeners, if you check this out, the book, If You Say So, James Swigert, you're going to find out that these were realities in his life.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm so grateful to have survived those. Mm-hmm. But what happened was, because we're all going to be victims of something in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how we respond to that is our choice. We have a choice on how we respond to that. And so some people, including myself, I chose to remain a victim for 30-plus years on a few of these topics.
Yes,
and I
yes.
suffered for it.
Sure.
And so what happened, a friend of mine, I was looping a story in my head that I'm unlovable, I'm broken.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And he said, sit down, get out a piece of paper, get out a pen. I'll encourage your listeners to do this right now. Sit down.
Love it.
Get a piece of paper out, get out a pen, and write down every word I say. Do not believe everything you think.
Great.
And then he hung up.
Oh, wow, that's great.
And I had to sit there and look at what I had just written.
My goodness.
And what it did is it cracked me open to the possibility of, you know, and so if you're out there and you're struggling with depression, you're struggling with addiction, you know, I'm here to tell you, and the book is here to tell you that there are other ways of being. Mm. It does not have to be like that.
Yes.
And there is a way out, and I outline a lot of techniques and exercises you can employ in your daily routine in the book to be able to come out of that. Because when I was able to all of a sudden believe that, wow, maybe some of the things that I am thinking about myself and saying about myself are just not true.
Mm-hmm.
What if that's a, what, and so that was where that little, you know, I had to have a chink in the in my armor, so to speak, to be able to let the light in. And that's how it started for me.
That's amazing. So there was no, well, that was probably the moment, the aha moment, as we call it.
I've had a few.
You want to share some of those?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. One of the stories that I want to share with you was when I was 20 years old, I had a crush on this girl that I worked with, and we started dating, and I kissed her goodbye on a Saturday night, and she was killed the next day in a drunk driving accident. And I drank and used drugs at that pain and didn't cry when that happened. For 5 years, I drank and used drugs until I got clean and sober at 25.
Good for you.
And I didn't know that I was trying to mask that pain.
Absolutely.
And the day I found out, I couldn't cry. I just shut down. There had been so much pain previously in my life, and so much loss and abandonment, and my dad leaving my mom and 7 kids for another woman, and then my mom leaving me for my stepdad, my older brothers and sisters leaving me with a bunch of stepbrothers and sisters who I didn't really get along with. And I just, so everybody had left, and this was the last person to leave, and I'm like, that's it. Shut down.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
you
and,
had to.
And,
it's called survival.
Exactly. Exactly. So a lot of these survival techniques we employ as children, they don't serve us in intimate, loving relationships as adults, do they?
No, they don't. They really don't.
Right? No. And someone said, wow, these are childish reactions to adult situations.
Exactly. Well, that makes so much sense. Good heavens. And we become hypervigilant, you know, with trauma as children growing up in those kinds of environments, which means we're totally aware of everything going on all the time, and we're very responsive to people's faces and what might be. As a matter of fact, we are empathic almost. We become empathic because we have to be in our tough environments growing up. Also, at the same time, what we do is we build walls, you know, in order to protect ourselves so we don't have to feel. We build, you know, that onion skin. We get thicker and thicker, and then we're really kind of strong, and we're into whatever zone.
And that incident, that was the last brick on the wall, right? And that was it. Game over. And so I went to the funeral. I went to her parents' house where she lived and sat in her room, and I just couldn't cry. And fast forward, 30 years later, I was on a motorcycle ride after my divorce, once again trying to take an inventory of my divorce. What's undone in my life?
Right.
What's unresolved?
Yes.
And I did not plan to actually go to have any kind of closure on that event. And so I was on a motorcycle ride up through Northern California, where I'm from. I rode my Harley up there and as part of my midlife crisis. And I found myself, the motorcycle actually took me to the location where the accident had happened. Now, mind you, this is 30 years later. And I pulled over. And I didn't know what I was doing there. And all of a sudden, I look across the street, and there's a man kind of eyeing me, and I'm in my leathers, and he's probably thinking I'm a dirty biker scouting out a house for a burglary or something. And so I just kind of wanted to put him at ease, and I waved to him, and I said, hey, how you doing? And he waved, and I said, how long have you lived here? He said, hang on a second. I can't hear you. Let me come across. And he was an old timer.
Yeah,
he was 80, late
80s. Oh.
And he walked over and he said, I've lived here quite a while. Why do you ask? And I said, well, my girlfriend was killed here 30 years ago.
My God.
And he just looked at me and he turned white and he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, I'm the one who found her.
Oh, my God. How about the universe
and guess what
bringing
happened?
You to him? What? That's it. You
30
lost
years
it.
Of tears.
You lost Can't, it.
I started bawling. I
Isn't
lost
that?
It. What are the chances? It was 11 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, 30 years later, that this guy would, A, be alive still, and be there at the moment that I just happened to pull over my motorcycle on that corner. And he just let, he said, let it out, son, let it out. And I just, I'm getting emotional now when I tell the story.
That's heavy, James.
Because it was, you know, 30 years of anguish and, and plus the previous 25 years of the abandonment and the, just everything of just the love that was lost.
Yes. Yes.
Cause my heart, I had closed, I'd just shut down and, you know, I got to tell him her name and that she was a cheerleader in high school and she loved unicorns and, and he you know, was able to comfort me a little bit that, that she didn't suffer. And and so it was that moment of closure. And
that
it's,
is a beautiful story.
I got lucky on that one.
Yes, you did.
I got lucky on that
one. Or, I don't know if you're, I know you're spiritual, but you know the universe kind of created that for you. It's sort of, you know, there are signs out there. Not to, you know, get... get into the paranoia. We all can get paranoid, but I mean, and look for signs that really aren't. It's just a thing happening in our, but so many things happen in our lives for our unfolding.
And I obviously wasn't ready for that until that moment, right?
Exactly.
And it was an incredible moment. And it's,
an
it's
incredible
when,
story.
And I love those moments when you, the universe just puts that stamp on you are right where you're supposed to be right now. And that comes from cleaning up our messes, getting flat with the universe, and living clean.
Boy, does it ever. And and thinking clean. And I mean, that's clean. Believing clean.
Being present, recognizing what's in front of you, and listening to the whispers, right? Our intuition. And So that's one of those stories that was really, really impactful.
Beautiful story. And I'm sure you have many other similar stories like that.
That one was pretty gargantuan.
That's pretty that's
that was a pretty
stuff.
Amazing story.
It is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in, you're on the couch here with Dr. Michelle. My special guest is James Swigert, and he's written another book. We're going to talk about your other book, too, and where they can get that and find out more about you. But the latest book is called If You Say So. It's My Story and How I Changed It to Save My Life. And it's a wonderful read, guys. You'll really dig it because, I mean, there's so much about James. You know, early upbringing, he gave you a little taste. And by the way, in case you missed it, James talking about some of his upbringing and his lessons and some of the aha moments he's experienced. All my shows are up in the archives the moment we get off the air. You can check them out here on LA Talk Radio. Channel 1, my webpage. Also, all my shows are free on iTunes podcasts. And, of course, we're live on Facebook, LA Talk Radio, Facebook Live. So if you want to check us out, you can see what we're doing in the studio here, which is just sitting and hanging out.
But I'm, a little disappointed that we're not actually on a couch.
You know,
I walked in and I was like, wow, okay.
Bummer,
all right.
I know. I was just going to say that. People like come in and go, where's the couch? It's like, working on it. You know, we got to just figure out the thing with the microphone and all that stuff. So,
No, this is great. An incredible view for our Facebook Live friends.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah, where you can see palm trees, the San Bernardino Mountains, and looking out over it. That's just beautiful, beautiful view.
Yeah, it is.
And the penthouse here.
There, that's it. That's right. Not to mention the, it's trash day in Sherman Oaks. Did
oh, it
you know
is.
That?
Oh, well, how exciting.
Here's some.
We get some of the beeping. Oh, is that what we got going on outside? All right. Yeah.
Special.
No, it only took me 10 minutes to get here. This is great.
That is great.
Close,
oh, wow.
Close by.
Cool.
Yeah.
So in your book, you say what you meant, some of the messages you mentor your people is life is like a train. Now, that's a very cool thing. Can you share more about that?
I sure can. I sure can. You know, originally, I had tried to write one book about my family, and that proved to be very challenging. And it took me many years to try to sort that out and my experiences. And then I had wanted to write another book for the young men that I mentor, the people that I coach, and that was, and so when I coach people, one of the first things I ask is, okay, what's your story? Right? Because we've all got one.
Sure.
So I'll let somebody just go and especially when I'm, you know, bringing in a new coaching client, now, what's your story? And then I'll just kind of take notes of like, okay, what's the story?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
we'll sift through which ones are true and which ones aren't.
Yeah.
And, but to me, story is so important.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a surfer. I spent a lot of time in the Hawaiian Islands, and the Hawaiians use the term talk story. When you just get together and just kind of shoot the stuff.
You know?
And they said, let's talk story. And that's really kind of what we're all doing when we're sharing our experiences, right?
Yeah, we are.
And so story is so powerful. And so with this when I started working with young men, especially young men coming out of addiction and alcoholism, who are getting clean and sober, to use an analogy, something that's really, really simple, like the title of my book, something mm-hmm. that just boils these kind of complex spiritual concepts mm-hmm. down into something very simple and, mm-hmm. and palatable for people who just maybe aren't overly educated mm-hmm. or aren't ready for big, deep diatribes sure. on certain topics. And so what I said is, this one young man, I just said, I was trying to impart what he needed to do next.
Yes.
And I said, life's like a train, okay? It's like one of those old steam engine locomotives where you've got this big, powerful engine mm-hmm. and you've got, you know, a furnace that heats that water that mm-hmm. powers that train, mm-hmm. right? Then you've got the coal car, which is the fuel that goes into the furnace. You've right. got the baggage car, which some of us spend a little too much time in the baggage car.
Yes, we do.
You got the bar car. I spend a little right. too much time in the bar car. Right. Some people, you know, and there's an observation car. Mm-hmm. You've got the dining car. You've got the caboose. So you've got a full train. Mm-hmm. And then those tracks that are laid out in front of us mm-hmm. are, you can think of it as God's will for us, destiny, fate, mm-hmm. however you want to mm-hmm. envision that. Mm-hmm. And what I did is I explained, I said, I've come to you now as your teacher, and your furnace is out. Yes. There's a smoldering cinder with a whisper of smoke coming from it,
yeah.
right? The
yeah.
fire's out.
Yep. Yeah.
And the furnace is actually an analogy. When I get deeper into the lessons, it's that's an analogy for your mm-hmm. soul's mm-hmm. desire. Mm-hmm. What is it you're here to do? You found your passion. You're doing it right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and I sometimes with young men, I'll ask them, what's their favorite sport? Mm. Soccer. And I'll say, all right, when Leo Messi is kicking goals and making hat tricks, he's not questioning his career choice, is he? When Tom Brady's throwing darts to mm-hmm. Julian Edelman, he's not mm-hmm. questioning his career choice. Mm-hmm. He's right where the universe intended him to be, no doubt.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so we all have that in us. Now, it might not be being married to a supermodel and making millions of dollars as a quarterback in the NFL,
sure.
but it might mean you being the best eighth grade teacher in Pacoima,
yeah.
California, mm-hmm. the kind of teacher mm-hmm. that students come back 10, 15, 20 years later to say, thank you for going the extra mile. Mm. Thank you for seeing me, for nurturing my creativity, my talents.
Yeah.
And encouraging me to pursue my dreams,
yes.
thank you for that.
Oh.
And so, you know, it's not about being rich and famous. Some of the like I live in Beverly Hills, and some of the most miserable people I know, I get calls to help them in Beverly Hills and Bel Air, you know.
I know.
And then, you know, I have a housekeeper who's one of the happiest people I've ever met in my life. He takes four buses from the other side of downtown. So,
yes.
you know, it's not about the money. No. And so what I do is I have a lot of people, very wealthy people, come ask me to coach them who've, mm-hmm. who've made a ton of money, and they're like, but I'm miserable.
Yep. That's right.
And I can't stop taking painkillers.
Mm.
And right. so that's when we get into start doing this deeper work. And so
that's right.
So that's what the train analogy is for. And so what I do is I explain to these young men and women. There's a woman in Silicon Valley, an executive I've been coaching, and took her through the same mm-hmm. journey mm-hmm. of like, now it's time to go from your head to your heart. And to get down here and to find out, what am I here for?
Yes.
What am I here to do? So yes. the first thing we got to do is we got to clean up the mess.
Right.
Get flat with the universe.
Right.
And then learn how to live clean. Because,
yes, exactly.
because everyone's trying to take shortcuts to get there.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And shortcuts are the quickest way to the back of the line.
That's right. No, that's exactly right. You have to, and when you say live clean, you're not even necessarily, well, you are, but I mean, you're not talking about sober, clean, necessarily.
No, you're right. I'm clean and sober because I need to be because I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Yes, yes.
But there's people that, you know, can drink wine or they can do medicinal marijuana or even recreational marijuana, and that's fine. But when I say mean, thank you for asking me to clarify that. Mm-hmm. When I mean live clean, meaning I'm not cheating on my taxes.
That's right.
I'm doing what I say I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it. I'm faithful, and if I'm in a loving, monogamous relationship, I'm faithful.
Yes.
I'm committed.
Yes. You're real.
And I'm working on that relationship. And if I'm not, that's okay too. No judgment.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that's okay. As long as you're treating people with respect.
Yes.
And honoring the opposite sex or the same sex, whoever you're in relationship
right.
with.
Right.
If you're honoring those people.
Yes.
And you're being impeccable with your word.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
That's
living clean and doing your best.
Right. And something else you know, and I know you have some really great self-help stuff in your book as well. It's about sort of, we call it just kind of segueing. We psychologists call it segueing into a different thought. How can you make this thought? How can you make this meaning? How can you interpret this situation and spin it just a little bit? You don't have to go, you know, a 180 because you're not going to believe it. But how can you spin it and say, wait a minute, what? My husband's family has a, I always tease them because they have a thing about, they'll hear a noise or they'll hear something going on and they'll say, what's wrong? And I'll, I'll look at him and I'll go, what's right? Come on here. Give me, you know, throw me a bone. Let's get positive. So it's before going in, jumping into that. Oh, how can we just spin it a little bit to sort of dip our toe in the water of being a little more positive and feeling a little better, changing those truths? What are the best ways you suggest we, because we do, we have to get clean in our minds and our lives. So we're not carrying any heavy energy and negativity and become more authentic. And that way it opens the doors.
Absolutely. And as you know, and on your couch in the work that you do with your clients, there's a lot of work to be done. And so the analogy of what I tell these guys, I say, okay, great. You can spend a little time in the baggage car, get rid of the stuff we don't need, go to the dining car to feed yourself and to mm-hmm. get the nourishment you mm-hmm. need, right? You can go to the passenger car and visit with people like we're doing now.
That's great.
You can go into the caboose and reflect upon your travels, but don't stand there and look at the couldas, wouldas, and shouldas, right?
Yeah.
Get your butt back in that
right.
locomotive.
Right.
And put on your dungarees. I don't even know if anybody uses that term anymore.
That's cool.
But you put on your dungarees or your overalls.
Yeah, yeah.
You pick up the shovel and you get covered in soot and you get bloody knuckles and sweaty and you're shoveling coal into that mm-hmm, fire and you're fanning mm-hmm. those flames of that, your soul's desire. Mm-hmm. And that's the work that we do. That's the work that you do in your practice. Mm-hmm. It's the work that I do at the production company. It's mm-hmm. the work that I do with my book and my coaching and my mm-hmm. public speaking and motivational speaking. Mm-hmm. And that's called Shoveling Coal. So it's funny. I actually had that book titled Shoveling Coal. Uh-huh. But my editor, Michael Levin, who helped me last December, a year ago, when he goes, why don't we just merge the stories and the Shoveling Coal together and use the train metaphor and we'll put all those stories. And I was like, beautiful.
Love it.
Beautiful. So that's where Shoveling Coal is now buried
that's
in here.
But super.
So,
yes. Exactly.
And so I have guys. Actually, I've got a young man up here in Cal State Northridge, and he's working his butt off. He's got two Aww. Jobs. Can I say butt? Sorry, I don't mean to get
this
censored.
Is not FCC.
So, but he's working his butt off. Yeah. He's got two jobs. He's trying to get his master's degree. And I'll just to abbreviate our conversations, you know, he'll call me up and I'll say, how's it going, man? He'll go, shoveling coal, boss, shoveling coal. And I'm like, good, just keep at it, you know?
Exactly.
And I know he's doing the daily work he needs to do. So let's talk about the daily
work. All right,
work
let's talk about it.
And giving people some exercises and some tasks to employ. And this is what I do. And I'm you know, my fiance is incredible about her daily morning practice to set the tone for the day. And she's
beautiful.
Been clean this over 33 years. She's incredible.
Oh, that's great.
There's another guest.
So funny you just said
show.
That.
Yeah.
So you set the tone of the day.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, how do you do that?
And
how does
absolutely.
She do that?
And I recently spoke at the Keck School of Medicine at USC. And I was speaking to future doctors. And they wanted me to talk about my journey through to alcoholism and addiction. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, wow, I'm going to be talking to some smart kids. I better brush up. And so I did some research. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even in the 1800s, mm-hmm. There were authors and psychologists, William James, who wrote a great book, The Variety of Spiritual Experiences. Mm-hmm. He was kind of the father of early psychology, mm-hmm. and yet he was, so being a man of science, but he also was a man of faith.
Right.
And so he wrote, and he struggled internally with the question for himself, how can I be a man of science and also a man of faith?
Mm. Yes.
And he brilliantly wrote about, they're connected.
Absolutely.
Right?
Science is spirituality. It's all
mind, body, spirit.
Physics. Yes.
Yeah. And so he teed it up for Carl Jung, who came over in the early 1900s and Carl Jung even, who was obviously the most brilliant mind and father of modern psychology, was writing about and trying to help alcoholics in the 1920s. And he told alcoholics, he said, I can't cure you medically, and I can't cure you mentally. He goes, you have to have, there's another component that needs to come into play, and it's that that psychic change, that spiritual shift.
Yes.
And he said, it's body, which is abstinence for the alcoholic or drug addict, right? Mm-hmm. It's mind, mm-hmm. which I have to start to change my story and change my thinking.
Yes.
And then it was spirit.
Yes.
Body, mind, spirit. And it had to come into play. And he said, mm-hmm. you have to go through a major, he goes, the only people I've seen recover have gone through a psychic spiritual shift.
Yes, yes.
And so he teed that up for, you know, for other doctors to actually push to get you know, addiction or alcoholism back then, because the only people doing drugs were jazz musicians in Chicago and New Orleans. But alcoholism after prohibition, right? was rampant. So those early doctors like William Silkworth, they're the ones that pushed the American Medical Association to actually say, okay, this is a disease.
Yes.
It's a medical disease. I mean, it's a physical disease and it's a mental disease. Mm-hmm. And it got dual classification. But so with that, I had to realize that, so when I did the research before going to speak to these young kids, in studies, we have, you know, I don't know if you're, everybody can relate to this. Mm. This isn't just about addicts or anyone, but just everyone. When you wake up, there's that anxiety of like, oh no, the wolf's at the door. I've got to get to work. I got to,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
They're coming for me and I'm running out of money and whatever your story is.
Yeah,
right?
The monkey brain.
The monkey brain. right. And we all have that. That's that, you know, reptilian brain that we have. And it goes back to caveman days.
Right.
Like basically, like I got to wake up and to not get eaten by dinosaurs and sharpen my spear and keep my family in the cave and feed people.
Exactly.
And so it's that's with us.
Yes.
And so oftentimes, so if you wake up, you're not broken when you have that morning anxiety.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's what are you going to do with that?
Right.
Right? And so when I learned that, I went, oh, wow, that's everybody's got that.
Yes.
And so that morning routine to be able to control
mm-hmm.
what
right,
I
right.
do, right, what right. I say, mm-hmm. and what I'm focused on is how that's how I make the shift. So the first thing that I do, I walk the dog because he's got to go potty.
Yeah.
So I walk the dog.
Oh, that's peaceful.
Yeah. And it's a nice little walk. Gets my blood flowing and body moving and going for a walk uphill. And I live in the mountains.
Nice.
And so I take him for a walk. I come back. And then my prayer and meditation.
Mm. Yes.
So I sit. And I am spiritual. I'm not really religious. I think that religion is the politics of spirituality. I like to think that we're all looking through different windows at the same sun.
I'm totally with you on that. I mean,
and
I get it.
I mentor kids who are Christians, Jews, Muslims.
Sure.
That's spirituality to me, and that's truly God's love. So, so first of all, I pray, which is I basically just. And if some people are balking at the idea of prayer, again, that's non-denominational for me. But I had this old guy that I knew. His name was Vernon White.
Mm.
And he had two prayers. He had two prayers. A one-word prayer in the morning and a one-word prayer at night.
And what was that?
He'd wake up and he'd say, I'd look up at the sky and go, whatever. And he goes, I'd come home at night and I'd look up and go, thanks. And that was, so if you want to start with some simple prayer, how's that?
Whatever.
Isn't that funny?
That is
I love
hilarious.
That. And so, but it's that, it's literally that simple, but mine's become a little bit more of like, hey, universe, where do you need me to be today? What do you need me to do today? Where can I be a maximum service, you know, and help others and get out of my own way?
Exactly. Right. See, right there, you're losing the ego. You know, you're just going, okay, here I am, a being. Now, how can I connect out there in the universe with my mind that's in that heart-brain coherence place or whatever you're doing? Meditation. So prayer, opening your heart up to the universe, how you can help.
Because everything's connected, right?
Of course.
We're all energy-changing form.
You know, it's funny. I was, don't want to name drop, but I was talking to Dr. Joe Dispenza, and he was saying about how, you know, in the quantum field, they've measured now that it's actually 3 meters of energy that we can pick up. When we get 3 meters, 9 feet, basically, away from people, that's when we can really, 3 meters or closer, of course, that's when we really allow, when we meditate every day, when we can calm our minds, when we can tune into that energy out there, that's when we start really getting people. That's when we start really understanding it. We don't have to say a word, but we understand, and we can either, you know, pull away a little bit and see where that energy is from them, or we can, you know, embrace and have a vibe going on. But I mean, that's exactly right. We're all connected.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I do the prayer.
Yeah.
Then I do the meditation, yeah. which is, you know, I have a great mantra in the book because Bob, my teacher, Bob Palmer, who's I write a lot about in the yeah. book, you know, his mantra that he gave me is three words, three lines. Mm. I am here.
Yes.
As I am, so am I. Mm. So yes. I do the first two lines on the inhale, and then mm-hmm. the exhale is, so am I.
So am I, yes.
And that last line is kind of a double entendre, so mm-hmm. kind of a,
yes.
so am I, meaning I am so. So I am here, which yes. is bringing me into the present, like, right. where are you?
Yes.
So I bring myself current and present. I am here as I am, which is self-acceptance. As mm-hmm. I am, this is what you get.
Yes,
this is exactly. what you get in this lifetime,
right.
folks.
Yeah.
And then the last one, you know, uh-huh. so am I, which is yes. I am so. And then you're also mm-hmm. kind of like so am I, meaning there's that you know mm-hmm. universal spiritual energy or source energy
yes.
is present as well.
Yes.
So I'm not alone. And so that's kind of that last ringing.
Mm-hmm.
Piece of the mantra that's really helpful. And mm-hmm. then, and so I'll do that for, mm-hmm. you know, 30 minutes. And then I go work out because
mm-hmm.
the first,
yep.
one of the first things besides asking you, what's your story? The next thing I ask is diet and exercise. Hello.
Yeah.
They teach us in kindergarten. It's the first thing that
right.
goes out the window when we get a busy full schedule as an adult,
it
right?
It totally is.
And it's like, wait, yeah. are you eating well?
Yes. Exactly.
You know, are you drinking enough water? Water right. is one of the best medicines there is.
Yes,
you
it
know?
Is.
And it's like, you got to work out. And I mean, start with if you're, you know, overweight and you're struggle
yeah.
with the
sure.
the concept of exercise, go walk for an hour
yes.
three times a week. Just
absolutely.
Start there. Start small
right.
and ease into it.
Right.
But you got to really push yourself to break
mm-hmm.
a sweat. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the best uh-huh. cure for illness right
mm-hmm.
there is
mm-hmm.
exercise, right? And stress.
It is.
It's best cure for stress.
Yep.
And then diet. It's like, you know, sometimes there were times when I'm most depressed or struggling with something, you know, I eat like a stoned 15-year-old boy.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I'm like,
exactly.
what am I doing at Taco Bell and In-N-Out in the same
up
day?
That emptiness,
yeah.
you know, it's just like cramming and
yeah.
yeah.
And so we all do it. But the point is to not judge yourself.
Yeah.
And to not just, you know, I am so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well, just, mm-hmm. I'm going to go grab a salad on mm-hmm. the way home, or I'm going to go get some lettuce. I'm going to make my own salad. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, it's actually when you eat well, it's actually much more inexpensive. When
yes,
you make
it
your
is.
Own,
it's
when
true.
You make your own lunches, you make your little mm-hmm. salads, you do. So diet and exercise is a huge part of feeling better. It's a huge part of happiness. So
yes.
you've got prayer and meditation, diet and exercise,
right.
and then visualization.
Yes.
Visualization is one of my key ingredients. I have a vision board, and I'm a big fan of vision boards.
Mm-hmm.
And I just updated mine last weekend. Elizabeth and I both updated our vision boards. And it's just so beautiful to be able to put stuff up on a board.
Yes, exactly.
Do you do vision boards? Are you a vision board person?
I'm not a vision board person, but when I was really young, I would say probably about 9 years old, a friend's older brother was reading a book called Psycho-Cybernetics. That was the first book that was really written on...
Wait, how old were you?
I was about 10 years old. I know.
And you remember that? I wouldn't even
no,
been able to
I mean,
comprehend the
oh,
title
no,
of that book.
Oh, because it was so profound for me.
Amazing.
Because it
you
was
read
learning,
that book?
Yeah, well, yeah, I talked to him and kind of read through it. But it was very easy. It was
wow.
an easy read. It was like basically...
You're smart.
What I'm not... I'm
you're one of those smart ones.
Nah. It's what you think... you are, what you visualize in depth, which is everything. You go into visualization, and this is what athletes, the book was primarily about Olympian athletes and when they were using visualization, you know, and creating the reality in the mind, because the mind doesn't know the difference between what's going on in it and us sitting in the room right now. So you could go out in your car and visualize us, and the mind would go, yeah, Michelle and James were having a good talk. So it's basically manifesting and creating. So that's what you do is visualization. So you visualize a positive thing. You visualize where you want to be, what you want to do, and whatever, as specifically as you can. And that's something that I hung on to. It's, well, if I could go into that dream time and just create that. So you are a creator in your mind. You're into imagery.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm a very visual person. I'm ambidextrous. I'm right-brained, left-handed. But when I
yeah.
put those images up on,
yeah.
on this board, and I have a huge board, and
mm-hmm.
I put, you know, all my spiritual stuff,
mm-hmm.
a body, mind, spirit,
mm-hmm.
toys that I want.
Nice.
You know,
yes.
everything.
Yes.
And it goes up on that board, and it's
mm-hmm.
like, I set my goals for
mm-hmm.
my financial goals are
mm-hmm.
up on that board.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I do my prayer and meditation, I then read that and look at that entire board.
Mm.
And for me, it's having ADD. It's mm-hmm. it helps me focus.
Oh God, yeah.
Because every day I'm going, wait a minute, is my day
yes.
connected to what I'm looking at here? Because this is what I want. Is my day connected to what I want? And you know, and also on there is be impeccable with my word.
Yes.
You know, I have to, you know, and I have the cover of my book up there, if you say so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the universe will give you whatever story you tell it.
That's exactly right.
Right? And if I'm, and we know those people, right? They're their cell phone screen's always broken. They're always late to work and everything's this and that. And and you listen and they're very negative. Their talk is very negative. It's like, we're never going to make it. And they never make it.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
no, it's so true.
So that's the and so, you know, my niece is in med school. She's brilliant, mm-hmm. and she helped me with. I didn't want to hurt anybody in my family. I know my mom. It was tough for my mom to read some of this stuff. But,
sure, it was.
But I really wanted to make sure that I was navigating that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had my niece take a look at some of the early drafts manuscripts of the book, and she helped me and she read it and she came into me in the kitchen after she had read it. And she said, you know what, Uncle Jimmy? She said, you know what I love about the title of your book?
Mm.
You can't argue with it.
That's cute, but it's real.
It's true.
That's exactly right. Wow.
Isn't that great?
Okay, that is great.
Because here's the thing is, I'm not trying to convert anybody.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not trying to enroll anybody in anything. I just want people to know, the ones that don't. Right, because I'm sure you got listeners on the show that are they drank the Kool-Aid. They're personal development people, they're self improvement people.
Pretty savvy
folks, to me, and I'm out in the trenches working with young men and women at the Veterans Administration.
Aww.
We're dealing with PTSD and addiction. I'm out there working with drug addicts and alcoholics, trying to get clean and sober.
Sure.
And I'm on the front lines, and that's where this message is really important to go. Like, do you know you have a choice?
Yes. Exactly. And they're so firmly ensconced in their belief system, and it's just breaking those hardwired thoughts and breaking those patterns. We're just about out of time already.
No way.
I know.
Really?
Yahweh.
It flew. That was cool.
I know. It
okay.
does. It does. Great. It's fun.
I'm sorry.
It's,
I hope I didn't.
Oh my God. No, this is great. Are you kidding? I love this. Guys, if you want to get James Swigert's book, If You Say So, My Story and How I Changed It to Save My Life, you can check out our archives. It'll have all the information. And what is the best way to get your book and find out more about you, James?
JamesSwigert.com. You can get everything you need. I love motivational speaking, and I'll just throw this out there too.
Yeah.
I have a one-for-one program, which means whenever I do paid speaking engagements, a lot of the corporations that hire me will actually underwrite me to speak at other underfunded programs.
Lovely.
Or inner city schools, or
that's beautiful.
I'll speak anywhere for anybody if I can fit it into my schedule. So I love coming out and motivating people, especially young people, just to give them that message that, hey, it's like, you got a choice. You don't have to live in, because if you live in victimhood and blame, you can never be happy.
It's true.
Right?
It's really true.
So I want people to go find out, what are you here to do in this world? Let's get through, let's change these old stories, and let's find, what's the new story? And that's what's on that vision board.
Exactly. It's not all a message.
And gratitude is part of that morning routine where it's like, you've got to be grateful for everything in your life.
And, well, that's it.
Yeah.
And what's to come, which is already manifested. So I'm grateful for, even if you don't see it in your physical existence, it's there.
There's a great story written about our future.
Yes, exactly.
Just there, which really one is. Do you want to watch? The horror story or the romantic comedy?
Yeah. Yeah. And don't worry about if you've done it before in a past life in the quantum realm. Don't worry. Dude, change it up. It's time to change it up, folks.
I love that.
All right. James Swigert, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's such a pleasure to meet you in person. Lovely,
likewise.
Lovely work, and bless you for all you do.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And it's James Swigert, SWEIGERT.com. If You Say So is the name of the book. All right, guys, we gotta go. We're out of here. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and I thank you so much for being on the couch as always. Okay, next Friday, I'm going to be answering your questions. All those questions you wanted to know about your relationships, your self-esteem, some of the unresolved issues that you still have, from early days. Yep, I'll let you know, and my producer is also going to contact you. So stay tuned. I'll be back next Friday, 11 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time. And as I always say, do take care of yourself, and you'll be great for others in the world. And that's the way it works. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
conscience show as the sweet breeze blow, as the kindness come, hope still lingers on. I treat myself a newfound pity, sitting alone in New York City, and I don't know